A visual figure show of far-right extremism is now the fastest-growing form of extremism throughout the UK. Rising trend has raised concern now among activists and minority groups in Britain. And now joining us for this news review is Tony Gosling, journalist and commentator from Bristol, and Edward Corrigan, international lawyer, joining us from Ontario, Canada. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program. I guess we'll start there in Bristol, where it's probably more related to the matter. Tony, your thoughts on this?
Well, look, one of the problems is, and actually I'm afraid your reporter fell into that trap, is to link the Brexit campaign with this far-right extremism too heavily. For example, Nigel Farage, who was from the UK Independence Party, now the Brexit Party, actually did everything he could to boot out every single person with any kind of far-right record from UKIP. And the United Kingdom Independence Party was then taken over by a faction who wanted to have the far right in it. And what's happened to the UK Independence Party? It's now been entirely ditched. So Farage has actually been responsible for making sure that the Brexit campaign and the nationalists here in Britain will have absolutely nothing to do with these far right extremists, the racists, like Tommy Robinson, who, by the way, has just come out of jail. But one of the most important things to recognise here is that the Western media generally, not just in here in Britain, but certainly here in Britain, has been reluctant to call the far-right attackers terrorists. It seems that terrorists have to have a brown skin. And so, to a large extent, I think the police and the media have let this go under the radar. Now, we just heard that there was something like 10% of actual attacks were by the far right here in Britain. Well, the actual number of plots that have been stopped by the police and security services is much, much higher. One third of terror plots, and this is by people who've actually been convicted in court, now here in the UK, are far right extremists. And don't forget where this started. A lot of this far right extremism, for example, with Tommy Robinson, the English Defence League, who are the real extremists, actually started in Britain with meetings with Anders Breivik, the Norwegian lunatic that went and massacred a whole load of left-wing activists, young left-wing activists in Norway. This happened in the UK. They were setting up something called the Knights Templar. Another really worrying thing is when the English Defence League, the far right here in Britain, have been having rallies, what we often see, in fact, almost always see nowadays, is the Israeli flag. So they're aligning themselves very closely with Zionists. So this means that there is this extremist racist thread that's running through the far right. But I'm very pleased to say that the Brexit campaigners, including Nigel Farage, have kept a very long distance away from this. In fact, they're hermetically sealed. None of these people are allowed to join the Brexit Party or the old UKIP. Now, of course, UKIP has gone. But this has been taken very seriously because the attempt is to conflate the two. Nationalism, where we can be have our own borders and yet we can still not be racist. That's a big attempt that's been made in Britain to try and pretend that the two are the same, which they're not.
Now I'm going to swing over to you, Mr. Edward Corrigan. There's some strong points there because there are a lot of things that preceded Brexit. We have to admit that this isn't just Britain. This is something that we've seen throughout the States, throughout Canada, especially throughout the European Union itself, Britain included, you know, currently. Your thoughts, please.
Well, this is a problem that is in Europe and England, Canada, the United States. And there's a study in Canada that said that 40% of people had some sort of racist motivations in their voting. However, a lot of people, when you ask them or you take a poll, they hide that. But then when it comes out in an election or like in Brexit, you know, there is this undercurrent of hostility towards, you know, sort of Muslims, Jews, you know, blacks, foreigners, East Indians, Sikhs, etc. And I think a lot of people predicted that Brexit would fail and they would stay in the union, but people chose to vote and came out in droves. And of course, Brexit won on a 52-48% split in the country, which is almost like 50-50. Scotland voted against Brexit, so did Northern Ireland. And you have, I think the urban centers were more pro-Brexit, but a lot of the the more conservative rural areas were in favor of Brexit. And I think part of that is that the England and Britain that they see has changed. You have, you know, years ago when I was in England, I've been there many times, you would see a fish and chip shop on every corner. Now you see an East Indian restaurant. And the number of East Europeans and stuff that have come into to London and working jobs has, I think, created sort of an economic tension between people who are born in England and Britain and newcomers that come in from the European Union and undercut, you know, the British wage rates, take jobs away from British citizens. And, you know, so this is sort of an economic aspect to it, where it's not just, you know, against Muslims, against blacks, against East Indians. But I think that is really there. And there's a lot of books and studies and petitions that go against racism. But I think it is, you know, it's an undercurrent in the Conservative Party in Canada. And I suspect it's also an undercurrent within the Conservative Party in Great Britain, where you have Boris Johnson, who sort of compared to the Donald Trump of the United States. And, you know, he has said and done a lot of things that are very questionable. And he's lost his majority in Parliament. He's, you know, bending or breaking the rules to try to force through, you know, a Brexit option with no deal with the European Union. So, you know, this racism is there, but it goes back into the, you know, the 1930s and 40s, where there were pro-Nazi parties, even I would say colonialism and slavery, which was justified, you know, that blacks were inferior. And this, of course, carries on in the sort of the social fabric of the society, and also in the politics.
What you're talking about there is the eugenics movement, which very much definitely was part of British a scene, particularly between the two world wars. People like George Bernard Shaw, our king, King Edward VIII, supported the Nazis and supported the idea of the master race. I mean, this was a British phenomenon which spread around Europe. Once it manifested itself in the Nazis, there was a massive backlash against it, of course, but it's been hanging around for a long time. I mean, even in the United States in the 1960s, Charles Manson, the notorious serial killer, did his best to start a race war in the 1960s. What he was doing was killing white people and then planting evidence that blacks had been behind it. So this is actually a method which is used by the elites, by the oligarchy, by the intelligence services, some say, in an attempt to start race wars. So in other words, poor people of one race fighting poor people of another race, and the oligarchy just rub their hands as these poor people start killing each other. This is one of the things, I'm afraid, that we have to be very, very much aware of. I mean, it happened, for example, in Northern Ireland, setting the Protestants against the Catholics. This was not really a religious fight, and that we see the same, I think, in the Middle East, setting Shia against Sunni, where actually many of those people who are supposedly Sunni, for example, are mercenaries. They're being paid by, you know, through Swiss banks and this sort of thing. So there's a lot of manipulation goes on here. And the oligarchy, the rich and powerful, the 0.01%, want to see poor people of whatever sort killing each other. And so encouraging the far right is a big part of that.
And Edward, go ahead. I was going to let you get the last word in. We do have a little bit of time left. Go ahead. And
The eugenics movement actually started in the United States, then it spread to England, and then was adopted by the Nazis. So the origins of it, in fact, were in the United States itself, which a lot of people don't know. And there was a very strong eugenics movement. But of course, polarizing people and pitting groups against each other and resorting to crisis outside the country, like wars, or, you know, attacking Muslims in the Middle East, demonizing Iran, demonizing the Palestinians, and of course adopting sort of the Zionism, but in sort of it's racist form, where you have sort of an ethnocultural state that is killing and expelling and oppressing the indigenous population there. So, you know, there's a lot of these threads that are there. And there's also a big economic component.
But Edward, before Yep. Really quick, I don't mean to cut you off. We don't have much time left. But okay, that's 100 to 120 years ago, 80 and 40 years ago. But why today, when we know that most of the problems, you know, leading to these big income gaps and what I have and what you have and we don't have, goes back to the investment banks, the mega conglomerates? Why are the little guys, the poor whites, blaming the poor browns and blacks for their, you know, fate today in society?
Well, they
they're
want
being encouraged to.
Go ahead, Edward. I'm going to let you do it for a minute, and then I'll get Tony. Go ahead.
Okay, they want a scapegoat, just like Jews were scapegoated in the 1930s, not only in Germany, but in many countries. And, you know, when you see the poor people, they're the whites, they're losing their control, the demographic shift. They're not having as many children, so there's all these foreigners coming in. And, of course, they seem to be, are seen to be undercutting the wages of the, you know, the poor white class in England. As a result, there's, you know, real problems, but also exaggerated problems. And it's easy for populists and demagogues to blame these foreigners for problems that are, you know, are much more complex and in many respects are the fault of the British themselves, but they always want to blame the outsider. And that's the big problem. I think that's the one of the basis of racism.
Okay, Tony, we've got about a minute left, bud. Go ahead.
Yeah, the mass media have also encouraged this. I was quite close to the Muslim Public Affairs Committee in London, and they were having all sorts of trouble getting any press coverage at all. And yet Tommy Robinson, this far-right extremist, the founder of the English Defence League, was almost every week, he was getting his appearances on the BBC, on their main flagship Newsnight news programme. This isn't happening so much anymore, but what's happened is the mass media are picking on these specific individuals who are extremists, far-right extremists, and giving them massive publicity. And that, of course, enables the narrative to be created that, oh, well, if you're, for example, against Brussels, then you must be from the far right, you must be a racist. And there's been a definite attempt to create this. And this is one of the reasons, I think, that some of the people who have committed these far right offences have actually been mental patients, people who are mentally subnormal, and they have been triggered by these sorts of memes going around in the media. They're very, very vulnerable people. And one does wonder if they're kind of Manchurian candidates who've been manipulated into creating and committing some of these offences.
Gentlemen,
of course, Donald Trump has given a veneer of legitimacy to this type of racism with his statements and stuff, which has made the problem worse.
Good point, Scott. Gentlemen, I want to thank you both and for your contribution to the program. Tony Gosling from Bristol and Edward Corrigan there joining us out of Ontario. And viewers, that's a wrap for this segment of your Press TV's News Review. Thank you for tuning in and goodbye for now.